Today on Rock in the Suburbs.
Sending parcels of excrement through the post. Well, welcome back to Rocking the Suburbs, and it's day four of Black Sabbath week. I'm Stephen Routledge here in Scotland, and I'm talking to my metal musical brother over there in New York, Mr. Mike Cowley.
What's going on, buddy?
We're deep into things now. Deep. Day four, we wrapped up the recording and performance career of Sabbath yesterday, and we're going to rewind back in time to 1979 or 1980 when Ozzy Osbourne is fired from Black Sabbath. See where that takes us from there. Now, if listeners cast their mind back, you say basically Ozzy was fired from Sabbath. I think his heart hadn't been in it for a while. He'd lost the feel, and Ozzy's lifestyle.
Never say that. It seemed to be the end of Ozzy's, you know, interest in being a member of Black Sabbath.
Yeah, and his lifestyle issues had got to the point where I think Tony just lost patience. And yeah, he's basically living in a hotel in Los Angeles, and Don Arden's daughter, Sharon Arden, decides that she's going to make Ozzy into a star and kind of hitches her wagon. In more ways than one to his. Initially, they're not an item, but they soon become an item, and Sharon becomes Sharon Osbourne, and she becomes Ozzy's manager. And the Blizzard of Oz project that Ozzy had talked about is tried to put together, and he tries out a few different folks, but he gets a young hotshot guitar player from a band called Quiet Riot. He's taken to hear an audition in the studio by Randy Rhoads, and yeah, as is often the case at this point, three sheets to the wind. But, yeah, and Randy Rhoads is this quite small, quite shy, unassuming, but sort of fairly glamorous-looking guitar player who is an absolute prodigy, real virtuoso, and he's told to basically just play one of your solo pieces. 30 seconds in, Ozzy's like, jaws on the floor. Yeah, he's got the job. Why would I not want this guy to be my guitar player? Ozzy gets taken back to his hotel. Well, they don't have the heart to tell Randy that to stop playing after 30 seconds. So they leave Randy playing while they take Ozzy back to his hotel room, then come back and tell him he's got the job. Yeah, Randy Rhoads is one of those guys who, you know, as we'll get to, you know, sadly dies far too soon. But he was such a gifted guitar player that when he was getting lessons as a child, within 6 months of him getting lessons, his guitar player went to his mum and said, he knows everything I do. I can't teach him anymore.
There's a great documentary that talks about that. I can't remember. I don't know if it's a Randy Rhoads documentary per se, or if it's a Quiet Riot. Well, I know there's a Quiet Riot documentary that I came across where that mentions Randy Rhoads and talks to his sister and talks to his mother. But yeah, that's amazing that, you know, he's trained in classical music. Yes. And obviously his mother was a huge influence on his life.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, not just because they both died far too young, but he puts me in mind a little bit of Cliff Burton, because his main interest is not metal. I mean, he can play literally anything, you know, and does, you know. But yeah, he's, as you said, Mike, his main interest is classical music. Yeah, he's not really... Whilst he can, yeah, shred for days, and yeah, he classical was his main thing, you know. And whilst, yeah, and Cliff Burton had this much more eclectic interest, but the classical is really important because it influences both Randy's playing style and what he does in Ozzy's band, which, as we mentioned in Sabbath Week, Bob Daisley comes along. He's the bass player, and he writes the lyrics. Randy writes the music for what becomes the Blizzard of Oz album, which is, well, it's a classic, isn't it, Mike? I mean, yeah. As simple as that. I mean, it's not, what can you say?
I mean, when you think about Ozzy getting kicked out of Sabbath, and then what's coming next? And then he blazes out of the gates with this thing?
I mean, yeah. I mean, and to be fair to Ozzy, he never failed throughout his entire life, right up till the very end, to give full credit to Randy Rhoads. Yeah, he said it innumerable times that basically Randy Rhoads saved his career and probably his life by giving him a career.
I don't know if Ozzy would have had a solo career if he didn't find Randy Rhoads to join his band.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you look at that first album and just the names of the songs, everybody knows them, you know, especially with Crazy Train. Crazy Train's played in stadiums all over the world now.
Yeah, but the album is not just Crazy Train. That's the thing. It's not just one big hit.
Yeah.
It starts off with I Don't Know, and it's just, that's okay, that's a banger. And it just keeps going, really. It's just phenomenal. And it's like, oh, wow, who's this playing guitar? You know, and Randy Rhoads doesn't have the same sort of cachet and name recognition amongst the general public as like Eddie Van Halen. And even had he lived, he may not still have done, because, you know, by the time we get to the second album and Diary of a Madman and the tour for that, Randy's already had enough of the Aussie lifestyle on the road. You know, and Randy Rhoads is a guy who drinks Coke.
Yeah, he's just laid back.
You know, he doesn't take. Yeah, you know, he wants to play his guitar, and well, that's it. Basically, that's all he wants to do. He just play guitar all the time. And he already told. Sharon and Ozzy that basically he would do one more album after the Diary of a Madman tour, and then he was out and done. But sadly, we never got to that. But anyway, let's rewind a little bit. Yeah, Blizzard of Oz, because we're getting ahead of ourselves. Blizzard of Oz comes out in 1980, and the same year as Heaven and Hell. I mean, what a couple of absolute bangers to come out in the same year. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing you can really compare that to is when Van Halen came out with their first Sammy album in 86, and David Lee Roth had his all-star band releasing his album in 86.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's a very different feel. It's definitely not trying to be Sabbath. I mean, there's some of that stuff, but it's its own thing, isn't it? There's songs like Goodbye to Romance, which, I mean, if that had been a Sabbath song, I'd be lumping it in with Changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But because it's Ozzy doing his solo thing, and because Ozzy clearly has such a huge love of the Beatles and that kind of melodic stuff, and it's fresh and it's new because we've got this new exciting guitar player doing these crazy things, and it's just great, you know. So anyway, we should play something from Blizzard of Oz rather than just talk about it. What do you wanna hear from Blizzard of Oz?
Man, you know, I mean, we opened talking about Randy, and Ozzy gave Randy that little tiny showcase there with D. I don't know if you want to play that, but, you know, it's only a 50-second song. But it just kind of showcases Randy's guitar playing, where he's not being super flashy and throwing his hair around. He's just going back to his classical roots a little bit on that one.
Let's listen to a bit of that, because, yeah, it's a complete change of pace, but you can't talk about Ozzy Osbourne and without talking about Randy Rhoads. It's as simple as that. That's it, folks. But part of me thinks, you know what? Because Tony liked to put his acoustic interludes onto the Sabbath albums, didn't he?
Yeah.
And part of me thinks, did Sharon? Because, you know, you can't divorce the Ozzy career from the Sharon-ness of it all.
You know,
the apple did not fall very far from the tree. You know, she is most definitely Don Arden's daughter, whilst not you know, criminal in the you know, he's not convicted of kidnapping and torture like Don Arden was, but in terms of being a hard-nosed businesswoman and not being afraid to stick it to people who crossed her, including Tony Iommi, including sending parcels of excrement through the post to him at times, literally doing that. I mean, that's not a euphemism. That is actually what she did at one point. But part of me thinks, did Sharon think, well, we've got this red-hot guitar player who's clearly, you know, better. I mean, on every measurable, any definition, is a better player than Tony. Not as influential, not as, you know, not the Riffmeister General, but he's technically a better player. That's indisputable. It's like, Tony likes to do his acoustic interludes. Let's get Randy to do one, because it'll just be better. And Tony will hear it and go, oh, wish I'd done that. You know, part of me thinks that, you know, is why that's on there. But this, I mean, if you look at the live footage of, there's a, I think it might even be a BBC, I can't remember, but there's a live performance of them doing Crazy Train with Randy. And Ozzy is just like, you can just tell the way he looks at Randy. He's just like in love with the guy.
Yeah.
He's constantly looking at him thinking, this guy is in my band. When am I going to wake up? Like, this guy is in my band.
Yeah. Yeah, you could tell the love Ozzy had for that guy.
It wasn't fake by any stretch of the imagination, because it just, I mean, because that's the one thing with Ozzy, is that, and that's why he connected with audiences so well, is, you know, at his best, when he was just being himself,
mm-hmm.
people could relate to it because it was so honest. There was no artifice. And unfortunately, as we head through the 80s, some of that starts to come in and the quality then starts to fall off as a result. But, you know, at his best, he can connect with the audience because of that. He's just putting himself out there as himself. You know, there's nothing in between. For me, with when you're talking about Ozzy, really, the album that really stands out for me is the tribute album,
mm-hmm.
the live one that has the Randy era band, and you get, you know, the highlights from the first two albums, plus, you know, a few Sabbath numbers as well, which ironically, and this is the thing, Randy Rhoads hated Black Sabbath, and he hated playing the Black Sabbath songs. There was, yeah, he just didn't like, yeah, he just didn't like it, full stop. You know, he's like, well, I can play it because I'm Randy Rhoads. Obviously, I can play it all. But he didn't like it. Yeah, you know, and I don't think he was shy to tell Ozzy that either. But, you know, obviously, he realised that was part of the gig, you know.
Harry, you're going to have to play some of these things.
Certainly, folks, listen to the tribute album, because it's just, yeah, you get Randy in all, and the best of those first two albums. But, yeah, so Business of Ozzy is a massive hit, and Sharon quickly gets Ozzy and the band back into the studio to put out Diary of a Madman, which comes out the following year in 1981, which is also a success. It's not as good. It's kind of the Mob Rules to Heaven, to Heaven and Hell. It's the same, but not quite as good. Although it does have what I believe is Ozzy's favourite song of his own, in Over the Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's said repeatedly that was his favourite from the of his solo stuff. But yeah, it was definitely because the album was selling, and you know, everyone knows all the Ozzy stories and the madness and the things that went on with the wildlife and the Alamo and all these sorts of things. So that was generating a lot of publicity, and he was becoming more successful because of that. So you know, Sharon wanted to get another album out there quickly. So they recorded that and went on tour to support that in America. Do you want to hear? Should we hear a little bit of Over the Mountain before we?
Why not? That's a classic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's how a blast of that.
Another blaster to open an album.
Something in my vision, something
Yeah, just great stuff, eh?
Takes me back to my junior high days.
Listen to that on cassette, eh, Mike, I bet?
Yes, with a big Sony boombox.
It's not, of the two, Blizzard is by far the most essential of them. You know, you really should have Blizzard of Oz even if you don't like metal, because it's just the songs are just so good, and it's a great album. You know, Madman is just a not quite as good version of that. But sadly, on the tour for Diary of a Madman, Randy Rhoads, who is actually afraid of flying apparently, gets into a private plane, which decides, you know, again, there's plenty of stuff about there online if you want to read about it and the ins and outs, but fundamentally the plane crashes, clips the tour bus, all the people, including Randy Rhoads, who are in the plane, are killed, and you might think that that's Ozzy's golden ticket gone. You know, the tragedy of losing such a great talent, and obviously for his family, it's awful. And you know, had Randy lived, you know, I think his, who knows what he might have achieved. You know, as I said, he'd already told Ozzy and Sharon he didn't want to keep doing Ozzy Osbourne stuff. You know, he wanted to teach guitar, basically. I think, to which Ozzy quipped, "Do a few more albums of this and you'll be able to buy your own university." You know, because we're making, you know, they're being so successful. But yeah, he was taken away. But yeah, as I said, Sharon, being her father's daughter, was like, no, got to keep the show on the road. They're back on the road fairly soon. And we get another album coming out in, where are we? Let's get the dates right. It's, so yeah, 1983, we get Bark at the Moon.
Jakey Lee, Prodigy, comes in.
On guitar, and he's a very different guitar player, and a very good guitar player, but he's not as influential in the same way that Randy Rhoads, you know, was. To me, I find the album a big step down from the first two.
Same.
I do like Waiting for Darkness. I quite like that. I do quite enjoy that. But it's not as good. And you know, I was saying about the artifice and Ozzy's sort of being the genuine, you know, the kind of leaning into the, and this is where it goes back to the Ronnie James Dio quote of, "I'm not opening for an effing clown."
Right.
They start to lean more and more and more into the cartoon image of Ozzy as Ozzy. And as a result, the music suffers, to my mind. I don't know what you think, Mike.
Yeah, I agree. And just the album cover, just for Bark at the Moon. Speaking of bad Sabbath album covers, this is a bad Ozzy album cover.
The problem is, it doesn't get any better with the following album, The Ultimate Sin, which comes along in 1986.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's got a massive hit on it, Shot in the Dark, but, I mean, my notes on this are very short, Mike, on Ultimate Sin. Just hair metal, not good. Full stop.
Perfect. That's where I got off the bus with Ozzy. Even so much so that when Metallica was opening for Ozzy on that tour, I was a Metallica fan at that point. I didn't want to even go to the show because Ozzy was headlining. So I didn't go to see Metallica on their Master of Puppets tour because they were opening for Ozzy, because I wanted to see a full Metallica show. And I hated that album that Ozzy put out.
Yeah, I mean, I think even Ozzy has said he doesn't like it, although it is also potentially that there are some disputes about who wrote what, which is not a uncommon thing that's going to happen in Ozzy's career, certainly, when we get to the whole re-recording of... in fact, let's just touch on it now, that Blizzard of Oz gets re-recorded later in Ozzy's career, mm-hmm. because there's a fallout between Bob Daisley and Lee Kerslake and Ozzy and Sharon about who wrote what and contributed what. So they do an Ozzy's version with his current, future Metallica bass player Robert Trujillo playing the bass parts. They re-record it and put that as the version that's available until the fans kick off and say, No, this is not acceptable. And then they have to relent and then put the original version back out again. I mean, yeah, it's got its probably his biggest hit on there with Shot in the Dark, but it's just like, it's just rubbish. It's just not good.
I agree.
Yeah, not that the musicians are good, but the material is just not there, you know.
I mean, I think it's just part of that whole era for me.
Yeah, it's everyone who's doing that.
Ozzy's looks, you know, with his big old poofy hair, looking like the Housewives of Birmingham.
Yep.
I couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, that whole Decline of Western Civilization Part 2.
Yeah.
Now, I rewatched that recently, actually.
I watched it a few months ago.
Not pouring the orange juice on his cornflakes. Commissioning the bowl entirely. And man, I tell you what, there's some bad music on that film, isn't there? Oh, some of the bands on there are terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's for a whole nother
podcast. That's why it was called The Decline, because it really was a decline.
Oh, dear, yeah, it was. In 1987, we get the tribute album, which I've mentioned, and, yeah, if you're only going to listen to one Aussie album, listen to that, because you'll get the best of everything, really, on that.
Yeah, there's some great performances on that one.
Yeah, it's just good stuff. However, in 1988, we get the No Rest for the Wicked album with a new guitar player, a guy called Zakk Wylde, who, after Randy, is sort of seen as the main Aussie guy. He's a young hotshot, up-and-coming player when he gets recruited to Aussie's band, mainly because in his photo he looked like a guy who... He had the cream Les Paul and the blonde hair, and they thought, this guy maybe likes Randy Rhoads, and he did like Randy Rhoads. And Zach's got his very own, you know, distinctive style, a lot of pinched harmonics in the playing. And, yeah, the No Rest for the Wicked album, his arrival gives it a much harder edge.
Yeah, for sure.
We're still leaning heavily into the cartoon Aussie part of it, you know, and obviously we've got... Miracle Man and all that sort of stuff, but it's hugely more enjoyable than what's come before. Although songs like Crazy Babies are just bad. I mean, that's just not a good, just terrible song.
Yeah, yeah, it's right up there with the Alice Cooper and Kiss songs of that time period.
Although I do have to give a shout out to the riffage on Tattooed Dancer, some top Zakk riffage on Tattooed Dancer, but. But better things are on the horizon, Mike, because after Ozzy attempts to murder Sharon in a drug and booze-filled rage, he attempts clean up and things get a bit more serious. And in 1991, we get the No More Tears album. And for me, this is where it's time to jump back on the Aussie train. I don't know about you, Mike.
Yeah, there was some really great stuff on there.
Yeah.
Incidentally, it came out on my birthday that year.
Oh, nice. It's not as good as Blizzard, but what is good that's in on there is as good as anything else that he does, in my opinion. It's the kind of the Aussie grows up album.
Right. Yeah, you get the Mama, I'm Coming Home, you got No More Tears.
Yeah. Mr. Tinker Train, which is, you know, is a song written from the point of view of a child abuser, which is, you know, that could become cartoonish, but it's not. It's just darker and it's more serious. I mean, and yeah, Lemmy does a lot of co-writing on this album, including on Mama Coming Home. That old, well-known romantic Lemmy co-writes Mama I'm Coming Home.
It's got three, four co-writing credits on this one.
Yeah, but I've on my notes, I've got the title track for this, No More Tears. That's like Aussie's Kashmir.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
It's just right up there. And it was a big hit as well. It was a big hit album for him. Let's have a listen to a bit of No More Tears, and then we'll carry on through Aussie's career, if that's right, Mike. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that's kind of like Zach's coming out, that just the guitar work in that song where, I mean, that song became super popular, and Zakk Wylde had his own way, his own sound to contribute to the Ozzy Osbourne band with that. And then with Mike Inez's bass lines, who went on to join Alice in Chains later on. That's a really kick-ass bass line to kick things
Absolutely.
Off.
Absolutely. Yeah, too right. Yeah, it's not often, not many songs lead with the bass line, you know, as the intro, but it's certainly not in the, just in rock generally, it's not common to lead. Yeah, it's normally a guitar riff, isn't it, that kicks things off, you know, so it's just I mean, the album as a whole, it's not as good as Blizzard of Oz, because whilst Ozzy, as I said, Ozzy sort of sheds the cartoon image to some degree, you know, you still got stuff like Zombie Stomp, which could be a Kiss song, and that's not a compliment from me. <laughs> 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 and something like Road to Nowhere sounds far too much like Guns N' Roses. but the most significant thing about this album and the tours that follow it is, as we said when we're talking about Black Sabbath, is that, well, Ozzy gets, as it turns out, misdiagnosed with, was it multiple sclerosis?
Oh, yeah, it was MS.
Yeah. And so they announced that there'll be the No More Tours tour with the final show, and Ozzy will be retiring in 92 at the end of this tour, and he tells all the band, look, this is it, I'm done. You know, sort yourselves out, other gigs. So they do. Then they find out that Ozzy isn't that seriously ill, but obviously they've already sold it as the No More Tours tour, so they think, well, we'll do that, and then we'll unretire afterwards. Ozzy's first retirement is in 92, but that's not the case. And although there are personnel changes in the band, because Zakk goes off to do other things, and everyone else has basically lined up other gigs, we get in 95, we get the Osmosis album, and it starts a kind of a run of really four albums for me. Osmosis is more interesting, I think, than the two or three that come after it. However, it comes out in 1995, which I think is significant, because it's overly influenced by the alt-rock stuff that's going on at the time.
Right.
And I call this Osmosis, it's called the Zakk Gets a Rotary Pedal for Christmas album. Because his rotary pedal is all over this album. Like every, it's like, okay, Zakk, you got a new pedal. That he's on every song.
We get it. You like the pedal.
Yeah. And a song like See You on the Other Side, it just goes full Beatles, which I know that's what Ozzy loves, but it's not his strength, you know? His voice isn't. To me, his voice doesn't. As we discussed, he's got his strengths, and his, but doing a full-on Beatles type song is not it for me, you know. But so 1995 we get Osmosis, 2001 we get Down to Earth, which again is more kind of alt rock kind of stuff. We've got songs like Dreamer, which is just like more of the Beatles type. We always seem to get one of these Beatles kind of tribute songs thrown in now, and it just doesn't really work for me.
Perry Mason was, I think, the lead single off of this one.
Uh-huh.
And I just was not a fan.
Yeah, it doesn't really do it for me. I mean, it's not terrible. I mean, it's not like Born Again or Forbidden. It's not that bad. But it's just, as is, again, with the next couple of albums as well, it's kind of quite boring and just generic modern metal.
Yeah.
However, in 2002, what happens is the Osbournes TV show debuts, and Ozzy becomes a whole new kind of famous.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was talking about before, where he became the one-name person, the one-name celebrity out there that everybody knew.
Yeah, yes. As he said, your grandma doesn't know Ozzy Osbourne because of Symptom of the Universe. She knows Ozzy Osbourne because of the Osbournes. And Sharon, the dogs. and sadly, I think Ozzy becomes a bit more again of this cartoon character again at this point. Yeah, I mean, it's great for the ticket sales and the album sales and the publicity, but musically, I don't think it helps him because he becomes this caricature of himself. I think through the next two albums, Black Rain and Scream, they just become just... You kind of measure me off a length of modern-sounding metal with a saccharine ballad thrown in as well.
Following the formula.
Yeah, and just print that out every few years. You know, Black Rain comes out in 2007, Scream comes out in 2010, which is notable for Zach being out and Gus G being the new guitar player. But for me, it's not really until 2020 with Ordinary Man when we just get a much better album. I think, I mean, Duff McKagan plays bass on this album, and I think that makes a massive difference because he kind of brings a different energy to it.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got an all-star cast on there too. You know, that's the one where he did with the song with Post Malone.
Yeah.
Like, that's when the younger generation were like, who's this guy with Post?
Yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy that because I've covered previously, I'm not a rap guy, and it just isn't, yeah, that sort of stuff doesn't do it for me. But yeah, we got Slash on there, we got Elton John on there, but it's just more energy to the record, you know, and just more. And I think that just Duff adds a huge amount with his bass playing, you know, just kind of elevates it and gives it a different feel, you know, that's kind of missing from it. And we get into, and that's then followed up a couple of years later in 2022 with Patient Number 9, which is another even more all-star album.
Yeah.
We've got Jeff Beck, we've got Mike McCready, we've got some guy called Tony Iommi, I don't know what he's done anything before, but, and Eric Clapton also makes an appearance.
Chad Smith is on there, yeah, Taylor Hawkins.
Yeah. Yeah, who's who is really on there. I enjoyed this. I thought Escape, No Escape from Now with Iommi is pretty good actually. Kind of, it's probably better than anything on 13, I thought. Just surprisingly, Clapton busting out the Wah Wah on one of those days as well. But yeah, it turns out to be what is the final solo Aussie album, Patient Number 9. But it's pretty enjoyable. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it's cool that, you know, he got back together with Tony for that one.
Yeah, let's have a little listen to maybe to No Escape from Now, because I did really think that was pretty good. So,
it sounds like a Sabbath song.
Yeah, I mean, not surprising really, Tony and Ozzy in tandem. Yeah, and Yeah, I mean, I'm pleased that that his last solo album was decent, and pretty enjoyable. I mean, I think in summary with Ozzy's career, as you said, he become this one name guy. You know, there's not many people who can just say their first name and everyone knows who it is. But I think in terms of just looking at just the music, really, you can take the first two albums, you can take No More Tears, and the tribute live album, and you're kind of set, really.
Yeah.
If you really want to dig deeper into Ozzy's career, then maybe go into some of No Rest for the Wicked and Your Ordinary Man and Patient Number 9. But the rest of it, you can probably kind of just, you're not missing too much, I would say.
Patient Number 9, I think, out of the later albums, is definitely my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Yeah, I agree with that. It's just to having all these all-star guests, getting Jeff Beck for a couple of songs, it's always good to hear Jeff Beck playing.
And he's got Jeff Beck, Tony Iommi, and Eric Clapton. I mean, what?
Pretty good, eh?
He's got a little cachet, I guess. He can bring in some big names, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll wrap it up there, Mike. And we'll play out with something maybe from the tribute album, do you think?
That'd absolutely. Be a nice way
to, yeah. What do you want to go with?
That's a good question. How about Suicide Solution?
Okie dokie. Yeah, let's hit it. Okay, then we'll let Randy Rhoads and Ozzy Osbourne take us out, day 4 of Black Sabbath Week. Sharon, the dogs.